Coming up next, why your IQ isn't enough to advance your career. What can artificial intelligence teach us to be more intelligent? And then chief economist at ZipRecruiter, Julia Pollack, stops by. And of course, we take your calls. It all starts now. All right, folks, welcome to the Ken Colbert Show, where we help you win at work and in life. Coming to you from our Ramsey Solutions studios in Nashville. So let's get to this. IQ is overrated. Good night, everybody. That's the show. No, I kid. But we're going to do a deep dive on this. Your IQ, the actual score itself, and then let's just have some fun with this. We're not just talking about your IQ. And full disclosure, by the way, I have no idea what my IQ is. Not even interested. Now, I'll tell you why. Because I know it's not like crazy high. I know there are some brainiacs out there, and I'm not one of them. So as a result, I've never desired to know my actual IQ. You know what I mean? It's kind of like going, I know my vertical leap isn't very high, so there's no need to measure it. Just to confirm that I can't jump. So there is the reason why I don't really care. But we're not talking about just your IQ score. We're just talking about your overall intelligence, whether that is a combination of book smarts, people smarts, book knowledge, you smash it all together, how intelligent you are, and your IQ, they're overrated. What matters is emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence. So let's define it and then dive in. Emotional intelligence is the ability to perceive, control, and evaluate your emotions. To understand, interpret, and respond to the emotions of others. That's emotional intelligence. So, can you identify what you're really feeling, why you're feeling it, and then what's your control in the moment and the ability to evaluate, okay, how this all go down? And then the same thing with others. Do you understand when someone else shows you a different emotion? Are you able to understand it? Are you able to interpret why and what's going on, how it's affecting their actions and your perceptions and so forth and so on? And then how do you respond? So this is emotional intelligence. Now, Harvard Business Review has a report on emotional intelligence and leadership. And the majority of senior executives lack empathy. I know, that's not breaking news to anybody. Thank you, Ken, for the breaking news, the groundbreaking data. Isn't that sad that you're laughing at that statement? You're like, oh, yeah, you're right. That's really not groundbreaking at all. Thank you, Harvard Business Review, for that piece of data. But the issue is why? The issue is why do a majority of senior executives lack the ability to put themselves in your shoes? So empathy is kind of one of these words. We all know what it is, and we kind of know what it means, but it's also a fancy word. So let's just take the fancy label. Empathy. Take it away. What does it mean? It means I have the ability, whether I could completely understand it, I have the ability to see, oh, you're discouraged right now. I know what it feels like to be discouraged. I remember the last time I was discouraged. Ah, I'm going to come over to you and I'm going to step into your shoes and hear you, see you in the place where you are. Empathy. Now understand, empathy is not compassion. Empathy is the emotional intelligence side of things. Compassion is acting on it. But again, senior executives who have no empathy will not act on it, which is compassion. So absent of the ability to understand what their team is going through, to try to get on their level, to see what they're seeing, to hear what they're hearing, to feel what they're feeling, then they can't act on it. They won't act on it. So this is an important point to kind of camp out here for a second. And I'm gonna dive into this deeper next week. We've already planned out. We're working on this content. Just because your leader is a bad leader doesn't make them a bad person. There's a key distinction here. Because let's step back into what I was just teaching. A leader who has little to no empathy is going to have little to no compassion. They're tied together. If I can't understand your plight, I can't put myself in your shoes, then I'm not going to do anything about it. So many times, it's just, I like to call them the racehorses. These are talented women and talented men. They've gotten into an area of leadership largely on merit, but they've not been modeled. They haven't seen a model of healthy leadership. And they don't know better. And so what happens is they're like those racehorses with the blinders on. You'll notice at the Kentucky Derby that when they put those horses in the paddock and then they open those doors, the horses are straight, right? And you'll also notice that when they bunch up, they all come out of the gate and then they all bunch up. And then as it spreads out, but they're running in packs and there's always a horse around them unless you're the poor horse at the very back. And that poor horse is just looking at everybody else's butt. That's unfortunate, but that's an aside. Ever thought about that? Unless you're the lead horse, the view never changes. Well, that's a whole nother teaching for another day. But the reason they have those blinders on is to keep the horse's eyes focused forward. It's pretty brilliant because they're in close proximity. These horses are thundering down the track next to each other, and they've got those blinders on the horse to be able to just focus straight ahead. But here's the problem. When leaders have those blinders on, they don't see anything else except what's directly in front of them. They're thinking about the goals, the team's performance. They're not looking side to side, behind them, all around them to see what are my people feeling? What are they doing? Why are they feeling this way? Why are they doing this? It's just, whoosh, come on, everybody, run as fast as you can. Keep up with me. This is why so many leaders lack empathy. And I'm not giving leaders just a blank check. I'm just simply saying that a leader who doesn't know to look and hasn't been trained and doesn't understand that really the heart of leadership and the number one role of leadership is to check in with the team and the people and serve them. So a leader hasn't done this or hasn't seen it happen, hasn't been trained for it. Some naturally get it. Most do not. And thus, the lack of empathy. So here are five things that you can do, even if you're a middle manager, you're leading two people or 20 people or 200 people. Here's five things that will help you grow your emotional intelligence. You ready to go? Here we go. Self-awareness, first and foremost. Learn how others perceive you. What do others think of you? This is awareness first. Second, reflection. Then you need to reflect on this. So once I'm aware of what people think of me, oh, I need to sit with that and reflect on it. Third, self-discipline. Now you go, okay, I got to make some changes. I'm going to have to grow in this area. This is the discipline to act on the awareness. Then self-management. Guarding yourself, putting accountability in place, and then finally, self-development. Set goals for great growth. Don't move. More coming up are in the news segment. You're going to love it. This is the Ken Coleman Show. All right, folks, welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show, helping you win at work and in life. So artificial intelligence, it's popping up all over the place. You hear about it. We talk about it regularly on this show. I think there's this age-old debate, you know, going back to the first time I think we begin to see robots in the movies. You know what I mean? It's like, are they going to replace us? You know, it's kind of the natural thing. I remember when RoboCop first came out. By the way, I don't want to age you, Amanda, because you're so lovely, but Joe and I remember the first RoboCop.
I remember as well.
I know you do. I don't know if Alex and Nathan do. Do you kind of remember it? Okay. So, I mean, it was like, you know, Terminator, you know, Schwarzenegger. It's like when we first saw, like, you know, robots being popularized to like, whoa, this is like a thing. They could kill us all, right? There's this thing in the back of our minds. Like, what What does artificial intelligence mean? Where is it going to go? How does it affect us humans? I mean, this has been going on for a while, right? But this is an interesting take. So we're going to get to it. Is it possible that there are some emotional intelligent information that the artificial intelligence could give us? Let's break it down in the news. All right, so we opened up the show talking about the value of emotional intelligence, right? So the reality is that emotional intelligence may be the most important skill that a leader has. I think it's debatable, right? Depending on the job, you know, you might be in a leadership position where technical matters a little bit more, but by and large, it's up there at the top, right? Emotional intelligence. If you're just joining us, emotional intelligence defined is the ability to perceive, control, and evaluate your own emotions, but also understand, interpret, and respond to others' emotions. I mean, you could shorten all that and just say being an aware and nice and sensitive human. We could all do more of that, right? So this article from the Harvard Business Review, can artificial intelligence teach us how to become more emotionally intelligent? Now, you get on the surface, you're like, honestly, seriously, I don't think so. But we're not talking about robots. So get out Will Smith and iRobot and, you know, get that out of your head. You know, like, can a robot feel and then teach me how to be a good human? And the answer is no. It's absurd. It's patently absurd. What we're talking about, though, is technology being able to measure things. And we all understand that. We get that. So I'm going to read just a small portion from this article. Leveraging advances in emotion detection, natural language processing, and computer vision, and combining it with psychology and linguistics, artificial intelligence algorithms have gotten better at detecting, analyzing, and processing how tone, pitch, facial expression, eye contact, body language, and dozens of other verbal and nonverbal cues are influencing communication. So if you let artificial intelligence tap into your customer conversations, either voice or video or text, artificial intelligence can take complex and often puzzling data and find patterns in effective communications not apparent to the naked eye. All right. So if you look at roles requiring strong communication skills, leadership, public speaking, product management, virtual therapy, teaching, language learning, bedside manner, all of these could benefit from the measuring that artificial intelligence brings to the table. Now, this is a prediction, so take this for what it's worth. This report from Harvard Business Review says the combined market for emotion detection and conversation analysis by artificial intelligence could grow to $55 billion industry in 4 years. Now, let me just tell you something. I've been paying attention to this kind of stuff for a while. HBR, Harvard Business Review, is not off by a lot. $55 billion industry, that's no joke. And it makes sense. We have artificial intelligence that measures our physical health. And so the idea of tone, posture, all these things, and computers analyzing this stuff, I say all that to say, it's probably not a bad idea. You could put this artificial intelligence to work on a sales call as a sales training mechanism, just to give you an example. And what you as a leader could see and say to a trainee might be taken a little bit less defensively if it's AI. So I'm still all for the human touch. I'm always going to be for the human touch. But I don't think we throw all this out. A couple other interesting things. A study out of Yale revealed that emotional intelligence helps us make better decisions at work, of course. Another study out of Harvard showed emotional intelligence was more helpful than IQ in predicting team success. Again, not shocking, folks. We're talking about individuals. While very intelligent, they have to come together and work together. That's all emotional intelligence. And then a 10-year study at Google entitled Project Oxygen showed that emotional intelligence matters more to one's success as a leader than IQ or technical skill. And again, let me just park that. I believe as a leader, if you get really good at asking these two questions on a daily basis, you're going to be a phenomenal leader. Here they are. Very simple. How are you doing? That's not a greeting in the hallway where we zoom past somebody. How you doing? No. That's looking the team in the eye, the people you lead, one-on-one. Could be an intentional meeting or a private moment. Go, hey, how you doing? How's your mom doing? I know she was struggling with COVID or whatever. Be engaged in their lives and say, how are you doing? See, this is a relational question. Has nothing to do in the moment with their performance, but it has everything to do with their performance. Because when you can convey to people that you care about their lives, not their jobs, their lives, connection is established, trust is built, loyalty, performance, all of it goes up because of the emotional intelligence. That's the first question. How are you doing? That's a personal question. The second question is, how can I help you win? I mean, leaders, if you've never asked that question, polish that one off sometime this week and watch somebody look at you maybe like you got horns growing out of your head. Most leaders don't really ask that. How can I help you in my leadership role? You know your job description. I know your job description. Hopefully we know what you're being measured against. How can I help you? Blow their mind. Because at the end of the day, those two questions, and again, you can develop stuff out of that. I'm trying to simplify what I think so many leaders miss, that really excellent leadership is about emotional intelligence. How are they doing as a person, and how can you help them win in their role? This is huge. It's breakthrough stuff. You want to be emotionally intelligent. Now, there's a lot of deep dives and things you can do. But starting with those two questions creates a pattern, a rhythm of you being in tune. See, remember this. Every year they come out with new data. But if you look at the Society of Human Resource Management, where I first saw this, there's all kinds of data out there. People would rather be recognized. They would rather receive recognition or reward than they would get a raise. And some of you are going, that's just nuts. It's really not. And so we have to remember that if you are in a situation where you don't have an emotionally intelligent leader, I do want to caution you. I'm going to tell you something. They've either not seen it modeled or no one's taught them how to do it. It doesn't make you feel any better, but understand that people leave leaders, they don't leave companies. And listen, we're coming off of August, September, October, November, December. Each of those months, 4 million plus people left their jobs. Later in the show, Julia Pollack joins me. She's the chief economist at ZipRecruiter. I'm going to ask her. We're going to dive in deep. I've been talking about this. This isn't just people leveling up. A lot of that's what's going on. But we've also had decades and decades and decades of people feeling as though they're just a commodity. And we've got a leadership crisis that's feeding all of this. So understand, emotional intelligence is the game changer. It's an edge. It's the leadership edge. And it starts with your own awareness. Don't go anywhere. Your call is coming up next. Folks, welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show, helping you win at work so that you can win at life. If you think those two areas should be disconnected, you're wrong. It's impossible to disconnect them. Because I can tell you this, if you're winning in your personal life, but work is sucking the life out of you, you're dragging that home, it's going to start to compound and affect those that you love the most. The opposite is true too. You could be absolutely in your sweet spot doing what you were created to do at work. And if life is falling apart, you're dragging that into the office. So we want to help you see purpose in both sides of your life. We want to help you win. Coming up, your calls. Also, really excited about this. You know I talk about ZipRecruiter every day. Best way to get hired. Julia Pollack, who is their chief economist, joins me live on the program. Excited to get her take This is one of the things where you talk to somebody that you know is really, really smart. And here I am lobbing, you know, theories and opinions all day, every day. And then I get to get her to tell me if I'm right or wrong, which is fine. It's just fine. I don't mind being wrong. So she joins me later. You don't want to miss that. We'll talk about what's going on now, what's happening in the future. It is pretty amazing time. We live in a world where you can do a number of things all with just one click of a button. Think about it. You can unlock your car, watch a movie, call your best friend, even pay your bills. And now you can even do more with one click, like finding a job that takes you from paycheck to purpose. My number one best-selling book. By visiting my friends at ZipRecruiter. Sign up for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Ken. I'm telling you, it's easy, it's phenomenal, and it's free. I don't know why you wouldn't do it. I'm not pitching you something you got to pay for. It's free. ZipRecruiter.com/Ken. Fun stuff. Go do it today. 844-747-2577 is the number. 844-747-2577. Let's go to Brianna, who joins us in Springfield, Illinois. Brianna, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. How are you?
Good. Is it Brianna or Brianna?
It's Brianna.
Oh, I took a guess. Brianna. All right, we will correct it now that I know. Brianna, how can I help today?
Okay, so I do just have a question. So I'm working right now as a general manager at a restaurant. I do that 50 hours a week, and then I work part-time for a recruiting company, and I do that about 15 to 20 hours a week, and I love that part of it. I know I'm good at my job, I'm good at what I do, obviously, or I wouldn't be where I am, and it just takes a lot out of me, like mentally, emotionally, and so it's just, I don't know if it's what I want to do. I'm not sure. I'm really struggling with that, so I'm just not sure if I should quit managing, go back to, you know, recruiting, human resources, what I like to do, but it would be probably a $10,000 to $15,000 a year pay cut. And so I'm just really struggling with what I need to do. I do have two kids, so I have a 9- and 10-year-old. They see that, you know, good work ethic gets you, you know, a lot farther than a lot. And so I like that. I feel like since they were born, I've really just been working a lot, and I've just missed so much.
Yes.
And so
Are you a single mama?
I am, yes.
Oh, bless you. Bless you.
I just got engaged.
Oh,
but yes,
well, that's
very exciting. Yes.
When's the big day?
We're thinking next summer.
All right. And obviously, he said yes to this dude, but I'm on Team Brianna right now.
Yes.
So this guy got himself a good track. He's going to take care of you.
So he's in grad school right now. He's on his last semester getting his degree in finance.
Good, good, because you've proven you don't need any man, but we want a guy who's going to come in and shoulder some of this load as well. So this is interesting. I can hear the emotion in you because you don't want to be a general manager in a restaurant. But you're doing it because you're an awesome lady, and don't you mess with a single mama. I think the strongest person on the planet. No, I'm serious. I really believe that. I really believe that the single mom is the single strongest person on the planet. And so
you bet.
But you're doing what you have to do for these kiddos. So I think it's pretty obvious. But I will tell you, I want you to hold tight. Yes, I want you to leave, but I don't want you to leave until you have something to leave to. There's no sense. You're already stressed. It's sucking the life out of you. The hours as a general manager restaurant are awful. They're bonkers. You want to be home with those babies. But I don't want you to take a 10 to 15% pay cut. We don't need to. We're in the hottest job market in the history of this country. And I just believe with the experience you have, what I want you to do is hang tight. Be that strong mama bear that you've been, and let's find something to replace it. So either we're going to get a full-time recruiting job because you know you like it, and in recruiting and HR, there's a ladder. Would you agree for professional growth?
Yeah.
That's what I want. I want us to decide what's the ladder for Brianna, and let's make this move from the restaurant. So instead of two part-time jobs, can we get a full-time job that gets you on a ladder that you want to be on? Am I making sense?
Yeah.
That's what I want. And I don't want there to be any interruption in income. And so while I'm glad you're engaged and I'm glad he's going to be gainfully employed, right now we still got to take care of you and those babies, right?
Right.
So a pay cut is not cool, not in 2022. Not in February 2022.
Yeah.
So the question is there a full-time HR job that you got your eyes on, or the company that you're working with now, are they open to bringing you on full-time? Has that discussion happened?
So the company I work with part-time, I did previously work with full-time before. It just doesn't pay enough to...
Okay.
Yeah. So how much do you need?
How much do you need to make?
I mean, right now I'm making about 70.
How much of that is? So give me the breakdown. Part-time HR is bringing in how much, and general manager restaurants bringing in how much?
So general manager restaurant brings me $50,000 a year plus bonuses, so around 55 a year, and then the part-time position brings in about $1,000 a month.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. So how many years experience do you have in HR?
About 5.
Yeah. Good. I mean, I'm looking at HR positions. That's what I'm doing tonight. That's my homework the next 2 or 3 nights. It's not even take that long.
Yeah.
That's my number one assignment. I want to see what's out there, what's available to me.
Yeah.
I mean, listen.
And then the struggle with that is I don't have a college degree. It was a company that, you know, that I work for that kind of just took a chance on me. It worked out. So trying to find a position, you know, they want you to have a bachelor's.
Wait. Do you have evidence that says that's absolutely true? Every HR position that would pay you that kind of money when one company already took a flyer on you?
No.
That's what I thought. You don't have any evidence of that. It's like your kid's calling you up in the middle of the night going, Mama, there's a monster under the bed. You and I both know there's no monster, but we still got to prove it. So I want you to go get some proof is my point.
Okay.
Because listen, you got 5 years of HR experience. In today's world, there will still be people who will go, we want the college degree. That's the way we do things. I think those people are, honestly, I think they're short-sighted.
I agree.
I think it's ridiculous. I don't think that there is a college in America. I'm really going to offend some people on this one, but here we go. I don't think there's a college in America that if you did 4 years, and that's nobody does that, of straight HR stuff, they couldn't teach you what you learned in 5 years. Would you think that's true?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you've got so much experience. You've learned enough. So I here's my point. Let's put ourselves out there. Let's focus on relationships that we have in companies that have open HR positions that you know you've got the experience. Now, let's just look at them first. Can they pay you what you need? If not, then we have to sit there and we go, okay, what can I do now that pays me well? Even if I got to pick up another job that's a part-timer like you're doing now at the restaurant, but it doesn't have the crazy hours. We need to get you some emotional stability. That's what this is. We need to keep the financial stability, but also allow you to be home at those hours. That is what I hear in your voice. Am I right?
Yes. Yeah. You're spot on.
Okay, great. So I'm all about the short term to get me stable so that I can go to the long term. Now, real quick, I only got 30 seconds. Tell me, no fancy answer, what would you do tomorrow if you knew you couldn't fail? What's the dream? Tell me. What is it? We lost her. All right. Hey, don't go anywhere. More of the Ken Coleman Show coming right up. Welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show, helping you win at work and in life. I got to read a quick little comment from the YouTube chat room. Eric just typed in there, I finally took the giant leap of leaving my toxic employer. Yes! It was not easy, but it was the best decision I've made in a long time. If you're in the position to do it, and this is my favorite part, all caps, do it. Oh, way to go, Eric B. I bet that feels good. Hey, project management is one of the fastest growing skills in the marketplace. In fact, project management as a career path and occupation is expected to grow 33% through 2027. That's why we're excited to announce
that applications just opened up for our first ever Project Management 101 course. I'll be teaching alongside Ramsey Chief Technology Officer Brendan Wojcko, who leads all of our project managers here at Ramsey Solutions. Spots are limited, so don't wait. To apply for this course, go to RamseySolutions.com/project. That's RamseySolutions.com/project. We put out a free webinar, what was it, a month and a half, 2 months ago, and it went bananas. And I'm so excited, folks. You don't need to go to college to be a great project manager, and we are going to disrupt the culture on this. I'm tired of people paying for a degree they don't need and they can't use. All right. Here we go. Spanish Fork, Utah. Noah is on the line. Noah, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hey, Ken. Thanks so much for having me. My buddy Big Q and I are real big fans of the show, so it means a lot talking to you right now.
Thank you, sir. How can I help?
Just quick background with my situation. My wife and I got married about 8-9 months ago, and we graduated college around the same time and then moved from Pennsylvania to Utah. Mm-hmm. So we've been living in our pastor's like basement apartment for free, which has been awesome. And life's just been kind of crazy. It's had a lot of twists and turns and unexpected things. And I thought I had a super clear direction with my life and like for career and everything. And now I'm just kind of like, I have no idea what the heck I'm doing. So, a little lost, looking for some help there.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that you're lost. I think you're confused. I think there's a big difference. So sure. What's the big idea? There's one or two ideas that keep swirling around. I want you to stop thinking for the next few minutes and feel what's the big idea or two big ideas that you spend a lot of time wondering about?
Yeah. I mean, I really want to help people like in personal relationships, you know.
Area? Be more specific. See, you already started thinking. The audience could hear you. You started, then you went, I kind of want to help. Stop thinking. Who do you want to help? And what relationship issues do you want to help them solve? Answer that now. Go.
Yeah, no, youth and those my age or maybe a little younger, like those who are just behind me a few steps maybe, you know, I want to encourage and help like whatever kind of area of life they're struggling with personally,
now,
whether it's relationships.
It is. It's relations. That's it. Be specific. Tell me about a kid right now. Let's say I paid you really well today. Imagine a really awesome salary and I pay you the day version of that today. Who's the kid you're sitting with and what are you helping them with? Answer that.
It's the kid who's like struggling mentally, struggling at school, wants to grow, wants to flourish. But
now tell me why. Tell me why from either your, I want to know from your story, this is either your own experience or something you observed. Tell me why you want to help that kid.
When I was a teenager, I didn't really have that as a simple answer.
Well, that's a great answer. But you still feel ashamed. And you need to know it's okay to want to help people who are struggling with something you struggled with. Out of pain comes all kinds of clues about passion. People, we make finding passionate work we love. I call passion work we love. We make it so hard. It's not hard. We look to where we were in pain. And somebody helped you, true or false?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you resonated with them helping you, true or false?
Yeah.
And now you want to give that to somebody else that's like you, true or false?
Yep.
So stop overthinking it. So here are the questions I want you to answer. Here's your homework assignment. Very simple. Who's helping those people in my area? Who's helping them around the country? How are they helping them? So start looking at solutions and which solutions you get most excited about offering. So it could be guidance counselor, could be a therapist. That's your answer. Go look deep into who's helping the people that you want to help. How are they helping them? What do I get most excited about? All right, don't go anywhere. Coming up, Julia Pollack, ZipRecruiter chief economist, joins me live. It's going to be good. This is the Ken Coleman Show. All right, folks, welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show, where we help you win at work. And
in life. I am a man of the people. I just am. I'm here for you. I want you to win. I want you to know what's going on, why it's going on. It's why we talk about this all the time. We're bringing you stories right out of the headlines that affect you and your journey. What's going on? And so I'm super excited. Of course, I've been endorsing ZipRecruiter for a while for all of the right reasons. It's a free resource, which happens to be a phenomenal freaking resource that's free. Did I mention it's free? Okay. ZipRecruiter.com/Ken. Take just a few minutes. Get your profile up. Let them start working for you. But as I said, I got to get somebody smart from ZipRecruiter. We need to dive deeper into where do we stand right now, okay, as we come out of the most historic shift in the workplace that we've ever seen before. Pandemic into the musical chairs. I mean, just people are moving around. But is it musical chairs? We're going to dive in. Joining me live right now, ZipRecruiter's chief economist, Julia Pollack, joins me. Julia, welcome to the Ken Coleman Show.
Thank you so much. I love the show, so it's a great honor to be here.
Well, thank you. All right, so let's start with, do we see, and you're an economist, and your profession came up with this term, the Great Resignation, which I think is absolutely a wonderful moniker for what's really going on. Let's start with, do we see this trend where we've had 4+ million workers from August through December changing jobs, leaving jobs? Do we see this continuing in the near future?
Yes, and let me give you three reasons why. The first is change. So the pandemic changed the world. It made some jobs a lot more pleasant. It made other jobs a lot less pleasant. So let me give you an example. If you got a babysitter to go to work, and you got on the subway and went all the way across town, and then you stood at the front of a business welcoming people to that business, but now you have to ask them to produce a vaccination card and pull their mask up over their nose, your job got more expensive, less convenient, more unsafe, less pleasant. It just got horrible. Okay. At the same time, if you had a call center job and you had to go to a call center and make calls, you know, like a sardine right next to other people and wait for them to finish their call before you could make yours, those call centers, they sent you to work from home for more than a year and a half. And then they realized, wait a second, people can be trusted to make these calls on cell phones and laptops with our company software from home. They're doing a great job. You know what? We're going to keep doing this. Yeah. And so now you can get a call center job where you are at home in your pajamas with a game on at the back a lot of flexibility to watch your kids and do the laundry and cook and be productive in your life. So that's why that's one reason why people are leaving. Yeah. Right? Things change. Some things got worse. Some things got better.
So you see it continuing. What changes? What has to change for this to stop? And not that it's a bad thing, but I mean, or are we just in a new trend now where we're going to just see greater turnover with people just not staying as long?
I think we're going to see a lot of churn for quite a long time. Another issue is that there are 56% more openings right now than there were before the pandemic. And so whenever there are more opportunities, there's a better chance of a good match. Yeah. And so people are sorting into the jobs that suit them best. Yeah. And then finally, you have this really, really tight labor market. You have this labor shortage. In the past, when a company posted 10 vacancies, there were usually about 24 unemployed people for those postings. So there are usually, throughout American history, there have usually been more than 2 unemployed people per job opening. Now you have almost 2 openings per unemployed person. So that has changed the value, the market value of a job seeker. It's given them so much more leverage bargaining power.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's raised the roof. Yeah. The possibilities here have grown. Employers are reducing requirements. So if you had a coordinator role or a specialist role before, hey, you may actually be able to get a manager role now, even if you don't have that much experience. Yes. Right? We've seen the number of job postings that say no prior experience needed just skyrocket. So more opportunities, opportunities you might not have qualified for before, and then a whole lot more hiring incentives. You know, 12% of jobs are offering signing bonuses, up from around 2% before. Usually those were reserved for the best of the best, for top talent. Now they're being given to entire classes of employees in some companies. You know, all the dishwashers, all the busing staff. That just hasn't happened before. It's a unique moment. It's the golden age for job seekers.
That's a really, really great way of saying it. I think we'll look back on this and marvel at how things shifted so dramatically. Julia Pollack is my guest. She is the chief economist at ZipRecruiter. She joins me here on the Ken Coleman Show. All right, Julia. So you mentioned a couple things there. So we've got this job
disparity in that we've got more jobs available and then we've got not as many people. You did mention that jobs have been created. So I'm assuming job creation, jobs that didn't exist prior to the pandemic, is a part of this. How much is people leaving to go start their own businesses? Because the bar is so low these days to be able to start a business in the United States. And then is there something else that is adding up to the shortage, the labor shortage? What's going on there? Give me the full picture.
Right. So we have about 6 million fewer workers in the labor force than there would have been absent the pandemic, 5 or 6 million fewer. That's because the pandemic accelerated retirements. It also basically shut off immigration. So we had like 250,000 net international migrants last year. Yeah. Usually there are a million. So that's a huge gap in the labor force as well. You've got people who left and retired early. You've got people who would be here working who aren't. And then, of course, just the experience of being laid off or of having to stay home and look after your kids changed people's choices. There are people who had a kid right before the pandemic who by now probably would have put that kid in a daycare center and gone to work, who stayed home and, you know, that they stayed home much longer than they would have expected. And now they're like, wait a second, I may as well just stay home until the kid starts school.
Right.
It's changed our choices.
I want to jump in on this entrepreneurial piece. I felt like I saw a little bit of data on this, but have you seen enough data to say that some of this are people going, well, I can go back and work in the kitchen, you know, at the restaurant, or I can go work for myself. I make as much, maybe more, but not the crazy hour. I'm asking, is the entrepreneurial boom a part of this as well?
It's definitely a part of this. So we've had far more business applications each month since the pandemic than before. People are starting businesses at record rates. We're seeing people get realtor's licenses, for example, in record numbers, deciding to open their own real estate businesses. Mm-hmm. So many of those kinds of roles that people can do on their own, we're seeing them try it out and be quite successful.
Yeah. The latest job report from a trend standpoint. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people were kind of sitting on the sideline going, it might be meh at best, certainly might be bad. It was unbelievable. I mean, it was a very big number, the amount of jobs. It was over 400,000. I want to say 435,000 if I'm roughly. Yeah. Okay, great. Any trends, anything we see there that are really positive or anything that shocked you? What are you seeing?
So in the prior 16 months, there was a very, very strong relationship between COVID cases and job gains. And if you plugged in the enormous number of new cases that we had in the middle of January, 800,000 daily new cases, into sort of an economic forecasting model based on that prior relationship, you would have seen 2.3 million Americans losing their jobs in January. And that didn't happen. Businesses barely sneezed at Omicron. Even though throughout the job report, you see signs that it was hugely disruptive. So let me give you a couple examples. 3.6 million people were out sick from work. That's 3.5 times what you usually have in January. Usually there are about a million people out because it's flu season. But 3.6 million is a number we've just never seen before. It's way off the charts. 6 million people said they couldn't work due to the pandemic because their business was closed or there just wasn't enough business due to the pandemic. That's up from 3.1 million the month before. So twice as many people could not go to work. 1.6, 1.8 million people said they couldn't search for a job because of the pandemic. This is people who were like physically sick, who were COVID positive and couldn't go to a job interview as a result. I know from personal experience, I was trying to hire someone in January and every single candidate at some point postponed an interview or a trial
absolutely.
Day. Because of quarantining or a COVID positive test or COVID symptoms or something like that. So I expected to see hiring slowed down dramatically. And I thought we would get a net loss.
Yeah.
And instead, what businesses did when people were out sick was they turned to temporary help agencies and they created more jobs.
It's great news.
Substitutes.
All right, so, hey, she's staying with us. If you're our video audience, stay with us. She's going to talk about the 4-day work week and more. For the rest of you, this is the Ked Coleman Show.
Thanks for listening to The Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following @KenColeman.
If you enjoyed this podcast, we have more from the Ramsey Network, like Borrowed Future.
Hey, listeners, I'm George Camel, and in this 8-episode podcast series, we're exploring the student loan debt crisis and the impact it's having on real people. We're going to expose the predatory nature of the student loan industry, how we got here, why student loans are such a big deal, and what can be done to avoid them in the first place. We'll hear stories of people burdened by student loan debt and be inspired by people who graduated college debt-free. We'll also hear from experts and thought leaders along the way.
To hear full episodes, just search Borrowed Future wherever you listen to podcasts or go to borrowedfuture.com.